This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. There's a lot of work that goes into creating parks and trails before breaking ground on a project. Landscape architects are the people who plan every step of the process and then oversee the project to completion. With me today are key players in building parks and trails in Anchorage and Fairbanks. They're going to explain the importance of landscape architecture to the creation of the parks and trails we love. My guests today are, and it's a long list, Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and he's one of the drivers of the Alaska Long Trail, and he's been a frequent guest. It's really great to have you back, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Lisa. Glad to be here.
Mark Kimmer, a principal with Bettesworth North, is a senior landscape architect who has helped design many parks and trails across the state. Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Lisa.
Leah Boltz is also a principal with Bettesworth North and the co-founder of Parks for All, a grassroots initiative dedicated to advancing inclusive play in Alaska. Welcome, Leah.
Thanks for having me, Lisa. It's great to be here.
And Donnie Hayes is joining us from Fairbanks, which is very exciting. He is the Parks and Recreation Director for the Fairbanks North Star Bureau with 20 years of recreation experience and a seat on the board of the Alaska Recreation and Parks Association and a committee chair for the National Recreation and Parks Association. Welcome, Donnie.
Thank you, Lisa. Excited to be here.
We're really excited to have somebody from outside of Anchorage. We try to include outside of Anchorage as much as we can. So it's really great to have you here. Okay, so April is World Landscape Architecture Month. And the very first thing, because I guess I had never really thought about this before, and it was kind of a dumb moment. And, you know, you see from where I see where Steve is working, like the actual, you know, breaking of ground on trails, but everything that comes before it to get to the point where you can break trail. So, Steve, you throw an idea out to somebody, I'm assuming. And then is the first step to go find a landscape architect?
Well, it has been for our Russian Jack project, where we've worked with landscape architects from the city. But the panel you have assembled today knows a lot more about it than I do, because I've had similar perspectives to you, and then they've been steadily enlightened as I've gone along in my trail career. So I'm excited to hear from them today about all the planning and community involvement and all the things they do to get great trail projects and other park projects going.
Great. So let's start with, what is landscape architecture? Who wants to answer that? That seems like a Mark question, maybe, right?
Yeah, I'll take that. Thanks, Lisa. Landscape architecture is the planning, design, management, and nurturing of the built and natural environments. So basically, I consider this to be working on anything outside. For my work, outside of a structure, often in one of our parks or other community areas in town, we plan campuses, streetscapes, trails, residences, really anything outside. And I think a primary focus of that is to promote health for the environment and for people, and give them places to play outside.
One of the things when Sue first proposed this is that I went and I looked, and it turns out that like landscape architecture is like a very ancient practice. that's what I read, at least. So Leah, you're shaking your head. Yes. Do you have some input on that? Do you know some history of landscape architecture?
I knew you were going to ask me that. And I don't actually know the history. I just learned that recently, that it was an ancient practice. So I don't have much more to add on that. But
it seems like even in ancient cultures, people have been looking at the landscape and going, oh, we need a plan before we just go do something here.
Yeah, Lisa, I could speak to that a bit. Really, the projects that come to mind are city planning. You know, if we're going way back, even Washington, D.C., all of our cities were planned. And although the term landscape architect didn't exist in those days, it was very much the same process. You're planning the outdoors. You're planning a built environment. You can see that all through history. Any wonderful place that you've visited on a vacation or even locally, there's a real good chance that somebody that was like-minded to a landscape architect was involved in it.
Mm-hmm. So what specifically does a landscape architect do once they have a project? So Steve has said, we're going to build this trail, or Leah has said, I want an inclusive park. Do they pick the location, or do you help them pick the location?
We do. There's different kinds of projects, you know, for a park or trail. Often, let's just pick a trail, and Steve would be able to jump in on this too. You know, it's basically a need. Somebody's identified a need. They want to get from one location to the next. There may be a history of connectivity for pedestrians historically, but to make it more legitimate and legal, you start going through a planning process to basically identify the opportunities and constraints along the way between points A and B, and then find out what the land ownership is. And if there's discontinuous land ownership and you need to start discussing easements, that kind of thing with landowners, that starts the project off.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, if I could jump in just real quick.
Sure.
From the Parks and Recreation side, the National Recreation and Parks Association has three key pillars that we try to focus on in our daily work ethics. And that's health and wellness for our community, equity, and then also conservation. And so whenever we are looking at a project, it's those three things that really make a project powerful for the community and creates change. And so our landscape architects are usually the people that are helping us to dive in to how can we make this a project that does provide conservation for our community, does provide health and wellness, does make sure that equity is an integral part. Leah knows this more than anybody else. When we're talking about equity, we're talking about inclusion. We're talking about making sure that people have access to these facilities. And those landscape architects are my profession's best friends, because they're the ones that are able to really tie those things together for us and for our communities.
When you're talking about inclusivity, do you mean just like people who may not be able to access it physically need a way to access it physically? Or does that also go down to like communities of color may not have as many parks, and we want to find a place where we can put a park in a community of color?
Yeah, a lot of times people think about inclusivity and they think, oh, well, we just need to make sure that a wheelchair can get to the playground. Inclusivity has a lot more to do than that. Of course, you're looking at design, you're looking at ways in which people can go and feel safe in that space. Can people access it is important, but can they access it freely and be able to feel comfortable in that space? We're looking at the whole entire community as a whole, and are we providing enough green space and an equitable space to every different layer of the whole entire community? Do we have enough, like we typically have a goal of a playground every 5 miles in our community. Those are things we want people to be able to walk to a playground.
Is that part of the National Recreation and Parks Association? That's their goals. Every 5 miles there should be a playground.
That is a typical goal for most communities. And it also really depends on population as well, because the higher population actually decreases the amount of distance that you have from a playground to a person's home. So mm-hmm. if there's a larger concentration of people, you actually want it to one playground per mile could be the designation. So there's really a lot of variables in there, but you're looking at your community and saying, how can I make sure that people have access to these mm-hmm. facilities?
Especially in Alaska, is one of those things like, how can we make sure that people use this park during the winter? Because that's like kind of a tough one. You see like playground equipment that's snowed in, you know?
Absolutely. I actually just finished a project with Bettesworth North just a little over a year ago at Pioneer Park, which designed a fully inclusive playground that also focused on how do we increase usership during the wintertime? That was a major focus, right? Because that's about equity. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure people have places to go during the winter time as well? And so that included heated restrooms, that included an ice skating loop through the playground. It was looking at the design and how we could make sure it was really welcoming for wintertime activities. And so, like I said, landscape architects were in the thick of that design, making sure that those things were thought of and the best possible outcomes were predicted.
I think that one of the things, like when I was a kid here in Anchorage, is like playground equipment was made with metal. So that would obviously be like a dangerous thing in the wintertime. Like every kid stuck their tongue on it, right? You know, so is that something that you look at too now, as the materials are maybe different to make sure that that's not happening or make it more safe?
Yeah, for sure. That is one of the key components that we're looking at. We're looking at trying to use sustainable materials. We're looking at environment. We're looking at things like cost of shipments to us. I mean, we're in Alaska. Things are expensive to be able to get them here. So of course, we're trying to focus on how do we stretch the dollar to get as much possible for the community. We're looking at all the different types of materials and opportunities that come with that. And sometimes the best material are natural materials that are coming directly from our state.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting example in Muldoon here in Anchorage, the Chatsnu Park, which is a skating loop in the wintertime. But then because of smart landscape architects, then that can be a farmer's market or a food truck rodeo in the summertime. So thinking through different uses and how those can be enhanced throughout the season and be a real community asset is something that I've been really impressed by, because that thought wouldn't have occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Steve, I think, you know, that's a really special project to us. We were involved with that one on the landscape architecture side, but it really speaks to what you were saying earlier. I think Donnie mentioned about the community engagement. And that's something that Anchorage in particular has really taken a lot of initiative on, and it's been really important to involve the neighborhoods. And that's something, you know, Mark, you might be able to speak to this a little bit more about that community involvement aspect and creating not only the access to in different areas of the community for recreation and parks and trails, but also engaging the community in creating their park and their trail. And that one in particular had a really great story about the history of that area of town and the orchards there, and it used to be a place where food was grown, and so they wanted to really bring that back into the park. And we try to do that with every park that we do around town, is bring a bit of the neighborhood, the history, and what those people are interested in. And Mark, you might be able to talk a little bit more about that process and how you do that as a landscape architect.
Yeah, absolutely. All those things that Steve and Donnie mentioned, seasonal use, flexibility, kind of flexible space is I think the term I'd want to use for a park design like Chatsnu. And landscape architects, while we work with all of those components, we certainly don't come to the table and say, I've got all the answers. Here's what you need to do. We actually, I think at the end of the day, we're really collaborators, and we're quite used to working with other professionals, the community, and contractors to build, to make a project realized. Chatsnu and Leah's point about the context, the history of the area, that's really important for landscape architects. We really start our process with analysis of the site. So natural components such as views, winds, sounds, you know, if there's traffic nearby, which Chatsnu would qualify for that, vegetation types, things that might be sacred, if there's remnants of an old development on the site that might want to be retained and used for educational purposes. Those are all things we try to put out there as opportunities, And then we allow the community to respond to it and direct us to what they think is most important to them, because it really is all about the context. Even going way back, Chanchnu is Denina for Grass Creek. So that park really, and park planners with the municipality really wanted to make that an important component of this park, and recognize that we are on Denina land and that in the Anchorage Bowl.
Yeah, what isn't it also, is that where the Fish Creek originates? Is it, am I getting that right? There's a creek that originates in there.
That
was diverted and stuff over the years.
Chester.
Oh, it's Chester. That's where Chester originates. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty cool project when it was happening. That was really neat. And it really did seem to involve the community a lot. It's very important to them.
It was, and it's a really, neat part of landscape architecture. Again, that's kind of like working with the environment, fostering health with the environment, and a landscape architect led that effort. Mm-hmm.
So when you pick a place to, now you've decided, or maybe you go to Donnie or Steve or Leah when they decide, or well, maybe not Leah, but Donnie and Steve, and they're like, oh, I got this great idea for this trail or this park right here. And then sometimes you might say no, right? This might not be a good place. And how do you decide if it's a good place?
Yeah, that's part of the analysis. So one thing we do is what we call site feasibility, site study reports. So there might be with a municipality or a borough, they may have land holdings. They've got an idea, say it's for a park. Here's our three locations. So what we might do is start analyzing those for all kinds of things, all the natural components that I mentioned previously, views, vegetation, winds, those kinds of things, but also what's adjacent to the site. Is there the best site to support a playground because there's a neighborhood next door, those types of things, the size, owner, well, we've already established they own it. Trying to think of some other things. I think access for some projects, like maybe a fire station, response time is a really critical thing to understand. So you basically create a matrix and, you know, here's our three sites, here's all the categories we want to compare, and then you'll assign them a weighted score, if you will. And in, you know, best case, the best site will rise to the top, and that's where you start your discussions and your collaboration with the community and other professionals.
And Lisa,
yeah, you know, go ahead, Donnie.
Another thing to kind of go with that is that there's even a step sometimes before that, that is the overall community master planning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Fairbanks right now is in the midst of setting up our trails master plan. And so we are looking at the community as a whole and looking at all of our trails and what they need to look like over the next 20 years. In the next couple of years, we're going to be looking at all of our parks and playgrounds and facilities and be doing master planning for that. And, you know, Bettisworth and other landscape architects are going to be directly involved in helping to create those master plans, because we need to know what is the location for this facility, this trail that has the best trailhead with the best parking, best access, what's the elevation drop on that trail. You know, there are so many minute parts, and they're all intermingled and interconnected throughout the whole entire community. And so sometimes you have to look at that real big picture before you are able to start looking at the individual properties as well. And, you know, we've done multiple projects, you know, but Bettisworth North and other landscape architects throughout the state, and they're critical in that master planning process.
And a local example to Anchorage, Alaska Trails participated in the master plan project for Russian Jack Springs Park. And initially the trails that we're now hoping to work on, some mountain bike trails this summer, we had planned them too close to the actual springs and in the wetlands. And so the city wisely said, please take a step back. Let's go through this master plan process. And so I think what what trail builders and maybe Alaska Trails, you know, you're focused on that perfect trail, but you're not thinking about the broader picture that landscape architects think of, including that site selection, but then also making sure that, you know, we might plan and build the perfect trail, but if nobody knows about it, it's not signed well, it's not attractive, then the community won't know about it and won't take advantage of the health aspects of it. And so it's a really holistic look that landscape architects bring.
How long is the process from the time you decide, okay, one of you decide, Donnie or Steve decides, we're going to do this project, to the point where you're actually breaking ground on it? How many months or years?
Every single project is different, and it's all about, you know, size and magnitude. And it's also about funding as well. And
that's question I had was about funding. Yeah.
So sometimes this master planning process or the creation of a design like the Pioneer Park fully inclusive playground, we start with that planning process. So then we can use that planning process to be able to paint the picture for the community of what that could be, what it will be. And then we're able to start working on funding sources. So that Pioneer Park playground really is the perfect example. We've been talking about it for years and years and years. Finally, we were able to raise enough funds to be able to do this initial plan. And then we were able to start sharing it with the community. And next thing you know, that was put on our capital improvement list for the borough. Funding was provided for it. And then other businesses, local businesses, started reaching out to us saying, wow, we love that design. We want to sponsor one of the features on that playground. How can we do that, Donnie? And so sometimes it's about creating the image and the vision of what that is for you to get to that point of being able to find funding. Mm-hmm. And so it is a step. We're at year 3 of the actual design and layout, but we expect to actually break ground in 2006, 2007, and finish in 2007 for the Pioneer Park Playground. So we're probably about a 5-year process on that project.
Do you mean 2026?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. I thought that's what you meant. I'm like, oh, wait, are we going back in time now?
Hey, could I add on to that, Lisa?
Absolutely.
Bringing up the master plan is great. It's a wonderful process that is meant to include anybody. One of the most valuable advantages is it builds consensus with the community. So through your master planning process, you're connecting with the community. You're sharing with them. You're receiving information and feedback all the while long. And then at the end of your master plan, as Donnie mentioned, there's kind of an implementation component where you start identifying projects that will bring the master plan together into one vision and assigning costs to those. And then with that in place, you can, with reasonable confidence, move forward and build those components with the knowledge that you've looked at the whole system. You're not gonna go back in and tear anything out, or you hope you don't anyway, to when projects are built. And once those start falling into place, once the funding achieved, hopefully you'll have a plan that when you take these different projects to the assembly, say, there's been public buy-in all the while long, and you can confidently report that to your assembly members and hopefully see things approved.
So Steve, you probably have the biggest project here that you're kind of looking over the Alaska Long Trail, which is exactly how you just describe it, Mark. Like there's one big idea and then you have all these separate ideas, right? In different communities. And so how does that work with the landscape architects? Are you working on just one project at a time, like one section of the trail, and then they're looking at it, figuring out how you can do it, or yeah, just what's going on with
that? Well, so for the Alaska Long Trail, we've got a lot of partners, as you might imagine, to try to connect Seward to Fairbanks. You know, it's 500 plus miles. And we like to break it up into more bite-sized portions, you know, and we like to say that each of the individual projects that will encompass it are, you know, worthwhile for all of the benefits that Donnie and Leah and Mark have spoken about, health and well-being and economic value as well. But so it's each partner can take it on and try to find the funding and do the planning and sort of break it out into those pieces. And then there's links that will bring it together as a whole. And again, that's what I see the value of landscape architects, of those of us who are just focusing on the 3 feet wide and 100 feet in front of you, you know, trying to make a cool trail and not really thinking about the broader context and focusing on the long trail has enabled us all to take a step back and just be like, whoa, you know, there's that big line. How do we connect people to that? And how will they feel that connection, whether it's more of a natural feel, if they're out there for exercise, or if they're out there to learn more about cultural heritage, excuse me, and connection to the land. It kind of broadens the appeal.
So in terms of trails, when you're looking at trails versus parks, there are some things that you want to look at when you see a segment, like we want to get from here to here. How are we going to do that? So what are the things that a landscape architect would look for in an ideal trail situation?
You want me to take that?
Yeah, go for it, Mark.
Okay, thanks. Well, you know, there's different trails. Steve mentioned the Russian Jack Springs Park Master Plan. There's basically a hierarchy of trails in that park. And it's a pretty cool example of that, actually, where there's lots of different uses. It's bounded on all sides by neighborhood. And a lot of people go there to recreate. It's such a neat facility for the community. But in terms of trails, I think maybe broadly, things we look at are, you know, challenge. Is this a trail to get from one place to the other? Can everybody do it? We might consider grades and things like that, grades as in slope. So is it too steep for somebody that might have physical disabilities to manage? We think of things like views, the vegetation around it or not, you know, if it's passing through more of an urban area or a natural area. And in each of those cases, then you're considering different things like a natural area, say safety, lighting, you know, is it habitat for a bear or moose, something like that. But really then you start to get into more of the detail, the alignment. Do you want to avoid anything like wetlands, things like that? Also would influence cost, by the way, because your trail section would change from a gravel trail, say, to a boardwalk. So lots of implications there cost-wise. If it's in an urban area, then you're thinking about making sure that people stay on the trail. So signage, what we call wayfinding signage, is real critical to think about, making sure people know what destinations are in what directions, that they can travel there safely and confidently. There's, I think in a nutshell, that's some of the things that we would think about. And then there's also management of the trail, you know, the surfacing, if it's appropriate for multi-use or a specific use. Trying to think what else we might include in that. Long-term maintenance, you know, and costs, always something that, you know, a municipality or a borough would be interested in. So
that's always what we are concerned about. Always. Like in my head, I was like, Mark, you better say something about durability. Because I don't have money to maintain that thing. So we better make sure that it's going to last for a long time.
Yeah, we got to avoid our cottonwood trees because they're terrible. Yeah, that's a really good point.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, you'll hear more about landscape architecture from my guest, Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, Donnie Hayes, Director of Parks and Recreation for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Mark Kimmer, a senior landscape architect, and Leah Boltz, co-founder of Parks for All.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. Back to more on landscape architecture with my guest, Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, Donnie Hayes, Director of Parks and Recreation for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Mark Kimmer, a Senior Landscape Architect, and Leah Boltz, co-founder of Parks for All. This is kind of off, maybe it's off what we're talking about, maybe it's not, but just in the paper today, because of course this show is pre-recorded, so it's actually gonna we're about, when you listen to this, the public listens to this, we recorded this like 10 days ago, and today in the paper was the article about Ira Edwards asking for hunting in Kincaid Park. Would you like to comment on that? Because it would seem to me that might be a role to bring in a landscape architect to say, hey, this might not be safe to do in these areas, or maybe these areas are okay. And then kind of in that park, that the social trails play such a huge role. And so maybe talk about social trails actually a little bit, because they, when you're going to build something that hasn't been there before, you must be paying attention to the social trails too, right? Like, how have people been accessing this? How have they been getting from point to A to B? And actually, Steve, we've talked about this before, the ancient trails through the Chugach, and that people have been, you know, traveling for thousands of years, and how those need to be integrated in. Does anybody want to take that on?
I'll hop in on that one.
Okay.
So about 12 years ago, the Fairbanks North Star Borough created what is called the Tanana Lakes Recreation Area. And it was a long-term, you know, place where the kids went and partied, and there were just rusted out cars and mementos of bonfires of past. and so as a borough, we went in, we created, you know, new trails, the lake, a sandy beach. We're creating a new access to that facility. We created a master plan for that whole entire facility. And one of the things that we had to really look at very closely was previous uses, whether it be bird watching or duck hunting. And this had been an area where duck hunting has always been held, even before it was actually a true park land. And so that was something that we spent a lot of time in discussions with the community about, and meetings and town halls, and trying to find that balance, because you don't want to have a group of school kids out on the lake in canoes, learning about, you know, ecology, while duck hunters are shooting ducks overhead. And so you're trying to find that balance. And it takes the whole community to really find that when it comes to these more difficult discussions, because you want the community to use it. You want those kids out on the lake, but you also don't want to remove the historical uses either. And so how do you find that balance? And the number one way is by making sure that you are truly having long-term discussions with the community, and you are communicating them to the community about what is the expectations for that recreation property.
Donnie, I don't know if you saw way up there in Fairbanks, if you saw the article today or not, but it seemed like everybody, yeah. So everybody in Anchorage seems like they maybe saw it. So it is actually a balanced thing in a sort of way because Ira Edwards is in a wheelchair and wants to be able to hunt, and Kincaid is accessible for people in wheelchairs or, you know, hand cycles. Thank you. And it's, yeah, the lower Chugach, you know, isn't very accessible because you're on really rough trails and everything. So it is kind of a balance accessibility issue too. So just in a different way than the duck story, because I don't think there's ever been hunting in Kincaid Park. I don't think.
There's golf at Kincaid Park, right?
Yeah, there is. That's true. There is. There's a history of that. And there's a safety issue, but yeah, there's a balance. He's got some ideas. So that's probably for another outdoor explorer. But definitely it would seem like if there was that historical usage of a place that was hunting and you're going to change it into something else, you got to really look at that closely and figure out how to make that work.
You do, Lisa. You really brought up a good point. It's complex, and you really have to get everybody together and agree on the points that are important, you know, the guiding principles, things like that. You come up with that together, and it's complex. And I would say, you know, and from the perspective of the uses, Kincaid's a great example because a lot of people in Anchorage use it for, you know, seasonally too. So there's different things going on seasonally. And it's just such an amazing place. I feel like landscape architects can certainly contribute to helping resolve those. But to me, it's folks like Donnie who are managing the entire system. So there might be a request for a certain type of use like hunting. And you jump in if I'm wrong on this, Donnie. You know, you may suggest, well, there's actually a better place that we feel you could do this in town, or there's an existing spot where that actually happens that person may not know about. And it's really that diplomacy with the community members and stakeholders that it's just part of what we manage on a day-to-day basis. And my guess is that Donnie and park planners in that folks in that profession deal with that regularly.
Parks, so talking about parks, and we've talked about how important they are to the community, and it really, I think, also talking right now, like another important piece of this community part is that you bring a lot of people together and you create the sense of community, even if maybe it was there with certain people, but then people want to like pitch in and talk about a park and a gathering place and a safe place to be. So that's one of the things I wanted to ask about, that, you know, these parks can be connected to safety in your community. And an example that was brought to my attention was Campbell Creek Park. And so I want to talk about that because it's right across the street from me. And what was pointed out that it was not feeling like a safe park. And I remember several years ago, I saw drug users in that park, but I always felt fairly safe going through it. But what was the impetus to change that park? Because a lot of trees are gone. And I don't know if you all had a piece of that or if that was because of spruce bark beetle. But the park equipment was changed.
I can speak a little bit to that. We weren't directly involved with that, except for it was right about the time that the inclusive play and Parks for All movement got started in Anchorage. It was happening simultaneously to the fully accessible park at Cuddy Park. And it was, you're exactly right. You know, they were having the park needed to be upgraded anyway, but they were having some issues with some nefarious activity and drug use and crime, and it just was unsafe. And that neighborhood over there, there's a lot of families that live over there. There's schools, there's, you know, access to different facilities where there are children around. And it was not a good use of space there, and it was causing some safety issues. And so they used that as crime prevention. They upgraded that playground to an inclusive playground. They put some equipment in there that they had not used before. There's a lot of ground-based play for people to have access to. There's a unitary surfacing is what they call that. That's a more of a rubberized surfacing. So people with wheelchairs or mobility devices can get onto that barrier free. So that created just a different kind of park there. I believe there were also some environmental things that they were trying to solve there with it being close to the creek, but also create access to the creek and access to nature. And from what I have, what I understand, that really did turn that space around. It activated the space with positive activity. There are families there all the time. That's a destination park where people will ride their bikes to the trail and bring their families there. It's people from all over the city, all walks of life, all socioeconomic statuses, different backgrounds, different ethnicities. You'll see just a really diverse group of people there using that park now in a positive way. And I think that happens a lot where you activate those spaces, you do some positive things, and it definitely turns things around.
And I would say that's happened with a lot of parks throughout the city, thanks to groups like the Anchorage Park Foundation that's really focused on those things that Leah was just speaking about. And that positive activity brings more people out and pushes out the nefarious activity. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really positive thing for the community. People start feeling like it's their park and they want to have nice things and keep them nice, like Donnie was talking about, maintaining them. And you know, my son's a little bit older now, but we used to bike to that one all the time. It was a great destination park. And that's why it starts to link up in the way that landscape architects have envisioned, where, you know, your child can start to bike further and you can explore. It's fun to go to new places. And Anchorage, and I think Fairbanks as well, have that system in place that's continuing to grow with really positive activity happening in parks and on trails.
Well, I can say as a neighbor of that park, it's just wonderful to see so many families out there. It doesn't matter what the weather is. People come set up their tents and they barbecue and they're out. I mean, it's busy all weekend long, and you run by the park and it smells really good because everybody's cooking their food. And to also see that they've made, it looks like a better entry into that little waiting area of Campbell Creek. Because there's like a little area there that's really great for little kids to be in. It's not too deep, depending on the snow melt and everything. But then the clearing of the trees was, to me, a huge piece of it too. But I think that was more of the spruce bark beetle thing. But the whole area just looks bigger now. Just looks big.
I do think that's something that Anchorage Parks and Rec has been working on a lot lately, is the trees and the vegetation, both the spruce bark beetle and getting rid of some of those invasive species, but also from a safety aspect and crime prevention and getting rid of some of that activity that was maybe happening. So opening that up, and you'll see that all over town in a lot of different places too.
Mm-hmm. The studies show that if you can do two things in a lot of our parks and our playgrounds, is number one, increase visual access from all areas of the park. And then number two, if you can activate the park, Leah said that activate. So increase the number of participants, people that are using the space actively. It changes the dynamic completely. But it starts with creating that visual appeal. A mother who has a bunch of little kids, if she can see those kids from all points in a park or a playground, then she feels more comfortable to be able to go to that space and know that she can watch her kids and enjoy the time. And the kids then feel free to play and to connect with the other kids around them. And it really makes a huge difference. And so if we can do those two things, activate the park and create visual appeal to it and access visual, then really you've made a huge difference in that area.
I love that word, activate the park, because that's what a park should be. It should be active anyway, right? There should be lots of activity there. I love that word.
Yep.
Lisa, there's actually a process called crime prevention through environmental design. So it speaks and analyzes that exactly. Town Square Park downtown Anchorage had a SEPTED, crime prevention through environmental designs analysis done on it. And it was pretty neat because law enforcement was doing this more or less. So I thought it was really interesting that they're taking a look at these locations from the same perspective we might be analyzing them for design, and it actually informs the design. So it's pretty neat.
Oh, that is really great. I love to hear that. Another important part of parks, obviously, and trails are connecting with nature, which obviously I think a lot of problems that we're having are because people are not connected with nature. And I also think that in Anchorage and Fairbanks and other places in Alaska, that we have a potential because we have this big out-migration right now. This is a huge piece of drawing more people to our state. Not too many people, right? We don't want too many people, but we want more than we have now. We don't want to be losing people. Can any of you speak to this connection with nature that you get in parks and trails?
Yeah, I can. So there's actually a book out there called The Last Child in the Woods. It's a fantastic piece that's written, and the focus is really that we are missing out on nature and letting our kids spend time there, creatively, just like enjoying creating their own moments. It's not designed, it's not forced. It's just letting kids experiment with the world around them. And so sports are excellent, but a lot of times sports are also very regimented. When we get out in nature, we tend to not regiment that at all. And so while we're hiking down the trail, all of a sudden there's a water that the kids want to go and play in and splash in and throw a stick in and let that stick run down the river. That is all making neurons, like connecting neurons that they wouldn't have normally connected except for in that experience. And so it really is critical for us to make sure that these kids are out there in nature and that they are in those opportunities to create their own experience and make connections on their own without mom and dad or a coach or somebody else saying, well, this is what you're going to do and this is why you're going to do it.
And it's also critical for adults. So you're talking about a workforce and that out migration. Like Alaska has a lot to offer, and particularly now with I guess I would say expanded workplaces, people working from home and virtually, they can, and if they can work from anywhere, we want to have parks and trails and great things for them to do outside to be a calling card to get them up there and keep them up here. And so I think Alaska has a lot to offer in that. And that the more we focus on improving that, the more we can retain a solid and sustainable workforce.
So that would be one economic benefit of parks and trails is bringing people here, right? Mm-hmm. What are other economic benefits to parks and trails?
Well, certainly people come up here for trails and to get out into the wilderness. And what we're trying to do both with our Long Trail project and others is get people to think about spending one more day in Anchorage. Maybe they would rent a bike, maybe they would go down to Portage Lake or Whittier or do something locally where they could take advantage of the great trails we have. And then just by virtue of them being here, spend money at a restaurant or stay at a hotel and increase the economy that way. But those independent travelers being hooked on Alaska and its trails, I see as a very positive economic development.
There are other incredible benefits that happen by having parks and trails close to homes. We actually see home prices increase fairly significantly when they're close to parks and easy access to trails. And so that increase in home prices also means that your tax base increases as well. And then more families, more people want to be in those neighborhoods. And so it really provides a great benefit. There's also health benefits that come from having these green spaces and these parks. There are studies out there that have shown that patients that are in hospitals that have access to a window that can see green space actually tend to get better faster than hospitals that do not have that access. And so those are the things that we're looking at. They may seem like, oh, why do you need more trees there? We probably need more parking. But really there just is incredible benefits to making sure that our natural world is intermingled with our everyday life.
Yeah, that's well said, Donnie. I also think it's down to the individual level. Trails are an option for getting places. And I think that's a huge benefit. We all saw the fuel prices go up hugely over the last year. And I think it's a huge part of that economic benefit is allowing people to have options to different types of transportation, whether it's, you know, a trail to a bus stop or, you know, a trail that'll take you to work. And I'd throw in bike lanes on our transportation projects as being important as well.
And I'd like to point out that there's one silent person on this call, but there's six of us on this interview right now who have an economic benefit because of our jobs, because we spend a lot of time doing this work. So there's not just trail jobs of like creating new trails or the construction people that go out and build the park, but there's also people like us that benefit economically too, you know, the Springs jobs too. So.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Lisa, because that is one thing that I think most industries are doing right now is trying to recruit. And, you know, being in Alaska, you've got the extra added challenge of being a little bit isolated from some of the workforce in the lower 48. And we are in the process of recruiting right now for landscape architects and other designers. And it has been a huge part of the conversation. There's actually a lot of people who want to come up here and be designers in Alaska because of the outdoor experience. It's quality of life, but it's also the type of work they get to do when they're here that excites them and brings them up and is unique to Alaska. That's always a huge benefit that I see is, you know, play to your strengths. And Alaska's biggest thing that brings us all together is the parks, the trails, the outdoors, mm-hmm. The sense of adventure. I mean, we live in the world's biggest playground. So
yep.
we have the opportunity to capitalize on that for sure.
So let's just touch on a couple more things. And one thing, and we might have already covered this, Leah, this is more of a question towards you, is what really prevents people from enjoying parks and trails in terms of inclusivity?
Well, from an inclusive and equitable standpoint, I think, you know, what we talk about first and foremost is removing barriers. That's really what it's about at a base level, you know, and thinking about what that means for different people. Donnie, you mentioned wheelchair access, which is always the first thing people think about when they think, oh, let's design an inclusive or accessible park, or let's meet ADA requirements. You know, the ADA is an incredibly valuable piece of legislation, but it sort of is a baseline. And so what we like to do for inclusive play and inclusion is really make it about equity, is really make it more intentional and go beyond that ADA. And part of that is recognizing, at least from a child perspective, only about 1-2% of the population of students in the country have some sort of mobility-related disability, like they use a wheelchair. The rest falls along a spectrum of other types of disabilities or challenges, you know, anything from being blind or being deaf to having sensory processing disorders or autism or, you know, multiple disabilities, things like that. And so those kinds of things come into play when you're thinking about access and creating access and removing barriers. My daughter has a condition called spina bifida, which is a neural tube defect. And so she uses a wheelchair and a walker to get around. And so at a baseline, you know, she needs to be able to get onto the playground. And so, and that's really kind of the bare minimum. And then from there, the playgrounds that are inclusive, like Pioneer Park that Donnie was talking about, and and other playgrounds is they consider those other needs. They consider different equipment that addresses the processing needs, that addresses the different needs and preferences that kids have, and even adults too, and different generations, different abilities, different ways of looking at the world, and different interests. So
let's close out with Steve. I'm going to give you the last words here and tell us about the Trails Conference that's coming up April 12th to the 14th.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Alaska Trails is hosting its annual Trails Conference, as you mentioned, April 12th through the 14th at the BP Energy Center, but there's also a virtual option. It's our annual event to kind of kick off the trail season. It's before, obviously this year, especially before all the snow will be melted and we'll be out on the ground. So it gives everybody a chance to come together and share lessons from past projects, talk about what they're going to be doing in the future, and get together and network a little bit. We will have some speakers from the Lower 48 talking about building up trail crews and trail organizations. Always have talks about funding. One of Donnie's cohort from the Alaska Recreation and Parks Association will be presenting. We've got one on invasive species, which is new this year, and trying to prevent that during trail work. Some cool ones about maps and technology. And then a lot of the things we've been talking about today, the Alaska Long Trail, the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, which includes a lot of the ideas that we were talking about today, but really kind of a one-stop shop for trail stuff. So please check out that information and contact us if you'd like some more.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, this has been a really great hour. I really appreciate all of you. It was a big crew to handle all at once, but everybody did great, and really appreciate all your input on everything and your willingness to jump in and offer examples and promote parks and trails in Alaska. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to my guests, Steve Cleary, Donnie Hayes, Mark Kimmer, and Leah Boltz. You can find out more about landscape architecture, inclusive parks, and the Alaska Trails Conference from April 12th to the 14th by visiting the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show is produced by Eric Bork. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.